Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week we bring on new guests to discuss various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And tonight, oh, I'm so excited, our guest is Ann Andrews, who has actually written a couple of books about her own experiences with UFOs and alien abductions. What's really interesting about this book is it's called Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None, and this book raises the bar when it comes to alien abduction books. Like many of books about UFO abductions, Walking Between Worlds does offer a fascinating account of strange and unusual events, but it also takes us into new realms of possibilities where humanity takes its place as cosmic citizens, realizing our divine destiny, where the Earth becomes a station of light, a point of great radiance and vitality. This is a very unusual alien abduction story, which contains many elements I think a lot of you out there will be familiar with. And it's also got some very, very interesting spiritual aspects to it, which I found particularly fascinating, as I have run across several accounts like this. But this is one of the most extensive close encounter stories you're going to hear. So we're really, really, it's a treat to have Ann onto the show tonight. Now, Ann Andrews, who's the author of the book, was born in South London and has born and raised there. She is now married. She has two children, Daniel and Jason, and it was after her second son, Jason, was born that this well-hidden part of their lives came to light, that both Jason and Ann are apparently alien abductees. And since that time, the whole family has been plagued by a large number and a wide variety of paranormal and UFO experiences. And it took many, many years to finally accept the possibility, even, of alien interaction in their lives, after, of course, going through each explanation and rejecting one after another, until alien abduction was the only one that fit. And since then, they've come to grips with the phenomena, and that's what's so exciting about this latest book, Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None, is that it's written from a place where now they know what's going on, from a place of calm knowing of who they are and what is happening to them, and they now feel that they are able to deal with the alien agenda and all the paranormal things that are still going on in their home. So, Anne, I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
No, I read your previous book, Abducted, The True Story of Alien Abduction, and found it just gripping and fascinating, and I really liked it, especially because I think it's not fear-based. There's so many books out there that, you know, are trying to basically just scare people, and I thought your book was so sincere, and so this latest book, man, you know, I just can't tell you how impressed I am. So, wow, you know, growing up, were you skeptical of UFOs?
Yes, but very skeptical. You know, I mean, it was only sort of, you know, some years ago that we'd see sort of something, you know, something would be mentioned in the newspaper and we'd think, oh, you know, how stupid, or, you know, what load of rubbish. But, as I say, we're obviously not of that opinion any longer.
Right. Well, I think we're seeing less and less of that now that all these videos are coming out, and there's been so many shows, and just recently, I mean, people stepped before Congress and testified, so the United States Congress, and I know all these countries are releasing their files. Australia just released a whole bunch of UFO files. So I think the time is coming where people are ready to accept this, hopefully.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
So, you were just living a normal life and no UFO sightings going on when suddenly everything just turned upside down?
Basically, Preston. As I say, I mean, we didn't sort of just come to this this acceptance lightly. In fact, it actually took us more than 12 years to, you know, to sort of, well, I suppose gradually accept that it was to do with aliens and UFOs.
Right, and as I remember in your book, I mean, it was when Jason had a birthday party, was it? And he started, there was a bunch of paranormal experiences going on with the electromagnetic effects on the lights and stuff in your house, and he was spitting out a string of numbers. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
You know, I've heard that from other people, too, as well. I've talked to other people who had the same type of experience, which... So when I read that, I'm like, wow, you know, because that's pretty unusual. I don't hear it a lot. But so,
I suppose it would be, yes. Yes, totally.
So what happened?
That episode was rather bizarre. Sorry?
So what happened on that day, exactly?
Well, it was, as you so rightly say, it was Jason's fourth birthday. We just actually finished the party. My mum was with us. And the three of us, myself, my husband, and my mum had just sat down, you know, to have coffee after all the clearing up, you know, when everybody had left. It was a day in July, so it'd been very hot, and then naturally there was a storm brewing. But it was, you know, it was really when the storm started, you know, that there was very fierce lightning, there was thunder, it's like all of a sudden there was like a very loud, insistent knocking at the door, and my husband got up and opened it because we were all wondering, you know, who it could be at that time. It was about 10, 11 at night. My husband opened the door, and of course there was nobody there, so he just closed the door again. But then, you know, the knocking began again. This time it seemed to be coming from not just the door, but the front of the house, you know, the windows, the back of the house. And then pretty soon, you know, this horrendous banging was coming from all over the house. And then suddenly there was this really sort of fierce bolt of lightning, which you know, lit up the whole house. And it was at that point that Jason, who had been asleep on the sofa, on the couch, he just sort of sat up. You know, he was wide awake. His eyes were wide open, but you know he wasn't there. And he just started coming out with these incredible numbers. You know, just one after the other, just reeling them off. And I mean, you know, this is a 4-year-old that can just about. You know, count to 10 on his fingers. It's, and of course, he started to like move towards the door, and my husband, you know, just put his hand on his shoulder and he said, you know, where are you going, boy? You know, it's pouring down. You'll get soaked. And without even sort of looking, you know, Jason just said, I have to go. They're waiting for me. And then of course, the noise grew in intensity. You know, sort of worried about what to do. My husband actually reached for the phone, tried to call the police, but he found that, you know, the phone wasn't registering. And at that point, you know, sort of, I suppose out of desperation, you know, my husband just sort of picked Jason up before he could make it to the door, you know, just sort of very gently, you know, started sort of talking to him and, like, you know, hugging him tight and, you know, really, obviously, you know, extremely concerned. And then, of course, the more sort of, you know, Paul, like, spoke to Jason and, like, you know, sort of gently, you know, held him and, you know, and the more he seemed to sort of come out of it, like this trance-like state, you know, the more he came round. And the incredible thing was that the more he came round, you know, the more the knocking seemed to subside until it stopped completely when Jason was wide awake. You know, Jason didn't have a clue what had been going on. You know, he just sort of looked at his dad, gave him a hug, and he just said, oh, could I watch TV now?
Huh, well.
Just everything was, as far as he was concerned, was absolutely normal. As I say, the phone then sort of, you know, then worked again, so my husband was able to call the police. The police turned up, you know, very, very quickly. Of course, Paul went into what had happened, but without, you know, obviously mentioning Jason's part in it. And he went around the property with the police when they arrived. And, you know, they came back in, and the police said, well, there's just no signs of anybody being about. You know, you said in all this mud, you said you think there'd be footprints, but there's absolutely nothing. There's no sign of any, you know, any intruders or anything.
Wow.
Which was totally amazing. But it was I suppose just after that time also that we started getting a lot of the, you know, like the paranormal stuff. You know, we'd start to get electrical equipment which had a mind of its own. You know, you'd go to bed and then sort of during the night you'd hear, like, you know, that the television would come on blaring, and you know, and the kettle would be boiling itself, and you know, the cooker would switch on, and you know, this sort of I suppose, you know, for the most part, like niggly things. But say we sort of, you know, noticed that more and more.
Well, what did you think? They were ghosts, or, I mean, what did you think that was going on?
Yes, basically, we just thought, well, you know, we live in a property which is, you know, 150 years old, and it just seemed okay to believe in ghosts. You know, we just assumed that, you know, perhaps the place was haunted, and this is what was going on. But as I say, this continued, and then of course, you know, Jason's nightmares were continuing also, or as we thought at the time that they were nightmares. You know, he'd run into our room, you know, during the night or early hours, telling us about what he called small people would come into his room, and he said that they would take him away, make him go with them to what he called a hospital place. Where he felt that, you know, he was put on a table and, you know, sometimes operated on. And a lot of the time, you know, he said it was very painful.
Wow.
But as I said, you know, for a lot of years, we would just hug him and tell him it's okay, it's just a bad dream, or, you know, it was imagination, you know,
You still haven't connected it to UFOs at this point? I mean, the idea of UFOs hadn't come up at all?
No, as I say, you know, again, we just assumed it was, you know, he was having problems. He was having really, really bad nightmares. So we didn't sort of connect, you know, the paranormal things which were going on in the house with anything to do with, you know, UFOs, ET, or anything. It's sort of like, you know, the way we were brought up. It was like our social upbringing would allow us to believe in ghosts and spirits, you know, in haunted houses. That was fine. But, you know, to go from that to, you know, any sort of belief in UFOs or aliens was, you know, was just... It never even occurred to us. You know, it just wouldn't occur to us.
Well, at this time, Jason started drawing, like, weird symbols or a weird language as well.
Yes, he was. He used to draw, like, pages of these symbols. And as you say, you know, there were occasions when we would, you know, go past his room at night, obviously, but, you know, concerned about him. And he will be talking in this sort of strange, a very sort of soothing, calming language, you know, which was totally foreign to us. But of course, he had no waking recollection of any of this, you know, in the beginning.
Wow.
But as I say, it just, you know, the alien thing just never. We didn't even think of it.
Right. How interesting. So this continued on until, I mean, what point did you finally make the connection?
As Jason got older, I mean, his story never changed. You know, from the time he could first put words together, you know, his story never ever changed. You know, it was always the same scenario. It was always these small beings which came into his room. They came through the walls. They came through the floors. He was always paralyzed. He could never move except to be able to see, you know, see everything that went on. He described them on, you know, several occasions as being, that you said there were always small ones, which were like a greyish colour with the large eyes. But he said that there was always usually at least one taller one with them. Similar sort of thing, you know, he said, but just very slightly different, but obviously taller. And he said, you know, he had conscious memory of being sort of moved or, if you like, floated through windows, through walls, out to, what he could only assume was you know, some sort of ship. You know, taken into a room. He said it was always a round room. He said you could never see where the light source was coming from. And he was usually sort of laid on a table in the middle of that room. But as I say, you know, believing that they were just really, really bad nightmares. I mean, we took him for all sorts of tests. You know, he had all sorts of clinical tests. He was tested for sleep epilepsy, all sorts of brain disorders. We took him to see child behaviorists, psychologists. In the end, we took him to see a psychiatrist. And, you know, she actually wrote to our own GP, you know, saying that Jason is not psychotic in any way. Therefore, what he says and what he's always said is actually the truth. She also recorded some of the marks that she actually saw on him. In particular, she wrote to our GP about a triangular mark, which he showed her at one of their sessions was on his side. And I suppose it was about that time, you know, that we were actually sort of watching a program on television about hypnosis,
right?
You know, and the use of hypnosis for you know, helping people over phobias and this sort of thing. And there was a segment of the program where there was a guy talking about some missing time, and you know, and then it transpired that he was driving and he'd seen a light in the sky, which I'm sure, you know, you're familiar with that sort of scenario. And of course, you know, at that point, Jason got extremely angry because the guy on the TV was saying, you know, I want to know, I need to know what happened in that missing time, you know. And he just got up, threw something at the TV set, and, you know, just turned to us and said, you know, that man on there is so stupid because he shouldn't want to know. He said, because he said, I know what happens. He said, and I remember everything. He said, and I don't want to remember. And it was at that point that he left the room and, of course, left myself and my husband and our older son, Daniel, who was 16 at that time, you know, just... We were just sort of sitting in the room thinking, what on earth is going on? And, of course, it was actually Daniel who turned around to us and said, you know, don't you get it yet? You know, he said, Jason's being taken by aliens, you know, UFOs. And, of course, my husband's answer was, you know, don't be so ridiculous. And then, of course, I just said to him, well, if this is true, why have you never said anything? And Daniel said, well, I thought, you know, he said the shrink that you're taking Jason to would have got to the bottom of it by now. And of course he sort of went into it a little bit more and told us a bit more about it. And I suppose it was at that point that we decided, well, you know, maybe we should start looking into this subject. You know, I don't think it was necessarily that we decided that we believed him at that point. I think it was more a case of, well, we believe that he believes it.
Right.
You know, so it's like, you know, if we sort of learn a little bit more about the subject, then, you know, maybe we'll be in a better position to help him. And, well, I mean, obviously it was just, you know, some of the books that we were able to get, you know, just had like little bits and pieces. And it was just incredible, sort of, you know, reading sort of some of this stuff and thinking, my God, you know, that happened here, and, you know, this is what Jason says, and I don't know, it just sort of, you know, it just all went from there. It just, everything sort of seemed to fall into place, and, you know, we just you know, did some more sort of discovery, if you like, and looking into it, and, you know, speaking to people that, you know, had knowledge of this subject, and it just, as I say, it took us, you know, 12 years to actually come to the point where we said, well, you know, that this is what is happening to our son. He is being abducted by aliens.
Wow, it's incredible. Well, I mean, you've actually seen some of these UFOs. I mean, there was one incident in your book, as I recall. He came into your room and said, "If you look out the window, you will see them."
And that's correct. Yes, yes. That was actually quite chilling because it was like, you know, he just came in and made this statement, then turned and left the room. And of course, my husband and I were both sort of, oh, yeah, what. Okay, what do we do now? And, you know, we did actually sort of look out the window, you know, and at first all we could see were just stars. And then, of course, it was quite incredible when sort of one of them started to sort of get bigger, you know, and of course that was the last recollection we had of that.
Oh, goodness. Well, at this point you must be realizing that it's not only your son who's involved in this, but yourself.
Yes, exactly. That was quite a revelation too. Because throughout my life, I had only ever had one experience, I can call it that, which I had when I was very young. And it was just like this one memory that stayed with me, you know, right into my adult life. And it was just something that I knew that it wasn't a dream. I knew that it was real, and I'd always known it was real. But it was like, you know, because it was too hard to handle, you just put it to the back of your mind, and, you know, that way you don't have to deal with it. If that makes any sense.
Oh, well, yeah, no, I totally understand.
Yeah,
I've heard that before.
But
actually,
it was after that, you know, I started to sort of remember this experience that I had in a lot more detail. You know, and remembered sort of, you know, what happened from the point that I had previously remembered up to. If I can explain quickly. What it was, as I said, it was when I was very young. I found that I couldn't sleep. My dad was working, he was night work. So I asked my mum if I could get into bed with her, and she said, you know, that I could. She went back to sleep, and, you know, I was lying there still unable to, you know, to sleep myself. And then suddenly became aware that there was somebody or something in the room. I sort of peeked over the bedclothes, and at the bottom of the bed was like a cloaked figure, which I suppose is about sort of 5 foot, sort of, you know, look sort of, you know, like adult height, you know, to a child. And I remember it sort of, it didn't walk around the side of the bed. It seemed to glide, like a motionless, you know, almost. And the only recollection I ever had from all that time ago was of when it sort of got level with me. I remember like these like scaly hands sort of reaching up to the hood to push the hood back. And I could never ever remember anything past that point. But then of course, obviously once I started having you know, more experiences to deal with of my own, and obviously sort of, you know, we were now in a position where we were actually helping Jason to deal with his experiences. It was almost like I was being given back some of mine, you know, some of my memories to, you know, I suppose to help him cope with his, if that makes any sense at all.
Right.
And I remember, you know, I remember this a lot more. I remember this being sort of pushing back the hood to reveal this sort of very old sort of, you know, old face. I remember sort of, you know, the small grey beings were also there. They were suddenly around. And I also remember sort of being paralyzed and unable to move, and also the sensation of being like floated out through the window, and being taken up to, well, what I could see was like, you know, like lights, up in the sky. You know, and it was, I'd say it was just, you know, sort of experiences of my own. I was getting back, and, you know, so it was obvious that, you know, I too, you know, was being abducted when I was younger, and, you know, so yes, both Jason and I are alien abductees.
Wow. Well, you're not alone. I think there are a lot more people who are having these experiences than will admit to it or even know about it in some cases. And what's interesting is, you know, I've interviewed a lot of people who've had these types of experiences, and often, I mean, they'll become aware of them, but they don't really desire to talk about it or explore it or think about it. But in your case, you guys have not only confronted it, I mean, you've worked with it and I think are getting a lot of the positive aspects out of it, which is, again, what I find really fascinating about your book is, you know, some of the healing accounts and how, you know, the messages about Earth's future and things like this. So, I mean, wow, it's such a complex story, and I don't even know where to begin. Now, what prompted you to actually go public and write about this?
I suppose that the main reason for really for the first book was the fact, as I said, Preston, it took us, you know, 12 years to actually accept that, you know, this is a real phenomenon, that this is actually happening, and as you so rightly say, it happens to so many people, but. As I said, you know, it was just purely my own sort of social upbringing that just would not allow us to even consider something like this. And I decided, you know, well, I've got to, you know, I've got to let other parents know about, you know, what is going on. That's not to say that every child that has a nightmare is being taken, obviously, but. I felt very guilty that, you know, it had taken us that long to actually understand what was happening to our child. And as I say, I wanted other parents to, you know, to be aware that, you know, that this is a real phenomenon. And, you know, perhaps all I was asking was for parents just to listen to their children and, you know, with an open mind, you know, not like I did, you know, just, oh, it's nightmares, it's dreams, etc.
Right.
You know, and as I said, I think that the second book actually came about because I believe that the first book, we ended it, I think we were still a little confused and obviously a little bit fearful still. So I really sort of wanted people to understand that, you know, ours is very much an ongoing situation. But, you know, it's we sort of got more understanding, more acceptance, if you like, you know. And as you say, we now see it as a very positive, you know, well, certainly for us, a very positive thing.
Right.
It's certainly sort of changed our lives completely. You know, we are a lot more spiritual, not in a religious sense, but obviously, you know, we feel more of a connection with the earth and what is happening. You know, whereas before we were just sort of quite happily to go along in our daily lives, you know, look forward to the weekends and as most people do. But, you know, now it's like we've been fulfilled in a way. If that makes any sense, you know, we're a lot more grateful for everything that is here for us.
Right. Well, I think these types of experiences really do open up the person's eyes who it's happening to, and really does have a profound effect on your life and the way you view the world and your place in the universe and all that. But another thing I wanted to ask you is, what did your family and, you know, your friends think of you going public with the story and writing this book? You know, and especially Jason, because it is a lot about him as well.
That's right. Yes. Truthfully, when we first started with the first book, all the way through it, you know, we said to Jason, you know, are you sure that, you know, this is okay to publish this? You know, you understand that, you know, there obviously will be, you know, a lot of, you know, a lot of interest in you and all this sort of thing. You know, so he had that right to say yes or no right up to the very last before it was published. But he said, Mum, he said, I want this to come out because he said, although you were always, he said, you and Dad have always been there for me. He said, you've always, you know, loved me no matter what. He said, but he said, it wasn't until the day that you said to me, yes, we believe you. He said, it wasn't until you really believed me. He said that everything changed for me. He said, because he said, I now had your total support, you know, your understanding. He said, and he said, I didn't feel alone anymore. He said, it wasn't just me, Dee, or trying to cope with this. He said, I actually had you, you know, so like 100% with me. He said it's got to come out because we've got to say to other people, you know. He said it were probably feeling as alone as I did, you know, for all those years. He said it wasn't until that time that you know, he said that you were completely on side. He said that I suddenly started thinking, well, you know, hang on, I always come back from, you know, this stuff, and perhaps I should stop being terrified, and perhaps I should start listening and, you know, sort of maybe trying to learn something from this. He said so much changed for me that day. He said it's got to come out to try and help others. And that's the way he feels about it even now.
Well, I'm really glad you did, because I think your books are actually some of the best out there on this subject. So I'm really, really happy, and I mean, it's just great that you have gone public, because your story really provides a lot more information than a lot of the other books out there. All right, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and tonight our guest is Anne Andrews, and she's talking about her latest book, which is called Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None. Now, Anne, do you have a website, or is there any way people can reach this book through in bookstores and Amazon.com, I assume?
Yes, Preston. It is available on Amazon. It's also available through our publishers, which are Reality Entertainment or Reality Press. But I do have a website. So, you know, I would welcome, you know, sort of people contacting me, which is all the W's, walkingbetweenworlds.co.uk.
Okay, walkingbetweenworlds.co.uk.
That's it, yes.
Okay. Well, now, your experiences, I mean, like at Hawk's Nest Farm, where you lived for quite some time, you had, I guess, what would be undeniable to me, I mean, some type of government interference or surveillance. Is that still going on, that type of thing? And could you talk a little bit about that aspect of your story?
Yes, of course. Yes, we are still watched from time to time. We know that, you know, sometimes when we go out, we are followed. Also, what we get as well, because where we live now, we live right out in the country, you know, sort of deeper into the countryside, so that the house is, like, you know, very isolated. But what we do get sometimes is, you know, if we get up to use the bathroom in the night, when we put the light on in the bathroom, we find that, you know, car headlights will come on. Which obviously prompts us to, you know, to look out of the, you know, of the landing window, and there is usually a car sort of sitting across our drive, and it's almost as if, you know, that they wait until, you know, that they see some sort of movement inside the house, and it's like they're telling us that they're there by putting the headlights on. You know, my husband has sort of, you know, donned his dressing gown and you know, gone outside a couple of times to try and find out what's going on. And, of course, you know, the car just sort of starts up and drives slowly away. But so we get that, you know, we get that sort of thing quite a lot. But there was one incident which happened a few years ago whereby a lady who lives in another property sort of further down the lane, she actually phoned me one morning and she explained to me that during the night they had an intruder in their garage. And she said, myself and my husband went down to the garage. She said, we went in there. She said, and there was a man rummaging through, you know, some boxes and their bits and pieces that they had in there. She said he just looked up at us. She said, but she said he surprised us because he was wearing like a dark suit, you know, shirt and tie. She said he looked to be sort of, you know, middle 30s. And she said, and of course she said, when my husband just said to him, you know, who are you, what are you doing? She said he just looked up at him and smiled and just said, you know, I want to speak to Anne Andrews. And of course that they didn't know who I was at that time. And of course the husband just said, you know, I don't know anybody by that name. And he just again smiled at them and said, are you sure? To which, you know, that they both said yes, of course. And then, of course, the husband said to his wife, you know, well, go in the house and call the police, which she did. And then she came back and she said to her husband that the police were on their way. But it didn't deter this guy. You know, again, he just sort of continued rummaging through things. But she told me on the telephone that they don't know why, but they were both afraid of him. You know, the husband didn't sort of want to challenge him further because they were both scared of him. Well. And she said just before the police arrived, she said, sort of, you know, about sort of a minute before the police car arrived, she said he just stopped what he was doing and just looked at them and said, oh, I have to go now. And she said he just, gently pushed past them, you know, still smiling. And she said we just didn't feel that we should stop him. She said we followed him out, you know, thinking, well, we'll take down the number of his car or, you know, sort of wherever he's going. She said, and she said he just walked out into the fields just as the police car arrived. And, of course, she phoned me in the morning and she said, well, she said, I've got your number from the telephone book. She said, which he could have easily done. You know, she said, it's the same. It was the same lane, but obviously the wrong house. And she said I explained all this to the police when they arrived, and they said that they would look into it. And she said, but she said I haven't heard anything. And obviously, you know, she asked me if I knew who he was, and you know, at which point I said, no, I have no idea. You know, I don't know what's going on. And she said that she'd phoned the police later that day, and I did the same thing. And the gentleman I spoke to at the police station, I was passed, you know, from one section to another, and then I was eventually told, yes, don't worry about it, it's all been sorted out. But I was never told any more than that. And this lady phoned me back sort of that evening, and she said to me, she related the same thing. She said that she'd got in touch with the police, and you know, that they told her that. They said, you know, yes, okay, everything's fine. It's all been sorted out. You know, you don't have to worry about it anymore. And that was the only explanation, well, lack of explanation, either of us ever got. So, you know, who he was or what was going on, you know, we still have no idea. But it was just, as I say, you know, all they had to do was look us up in the phone book. So, you know, so, why sort of, you know, go to the wrong house? Obviously got the wrong house, which, I don't know, it just didn't make any sense, but...
Well, do you suppose you could have been an E.T.? You know, I mean, some E.T.s do look like us, as I'm sure you know.
Yes, I do get that feeling because, you know, purely because of the way that he was dressed, because as she said to me, she said, we we got such a shock because we expected, like, you know, youngsters or, you know, like, you know, vandals, that sort of thing, you know. She said, you know, she to see somebody, you know, like a smart young man in a suit, she said it wasn't what we were expecting at all. And of course, that the fact that they both felt extremely frightened of him, although all he ever did was smile at them. You know, she said, I can't explain it. She said, but she said we were both terrified of him.
Wow.
So you know, again, and of course, the fact that he left just as the police car arrived, it was, you know, it just doesn't make any sense. But as you say, Preston, I do feel that, you know, yes, maybe, you know, he was something to do with you know, ETs rather than human.
Right. Now, another really interesting aspect to your whole story is the way the ETs have taught Jason how to do various, like astral projection and that type of thing. Well, the astral projection I found particularly fascinating because when I got involved in UFOs, I also got involved in astral projection and actually learned how to do it pretty well for a time there. And there's definitely a connection, I think, because a lot of other people I've talked to who are having really extensive UFO experiences and have faced them and are confronting them are learning these types of abilities. And so Jason appears to have done this to a pretty remarkable degree, as a number of people have corroborated that they've seen him out of body or in their dreams. And also, like the healing story, the energy in his bedroom, that people come and visit, that's another whole story that I would love to hear more about, that type of thing.
Oh, right. You mean the energies in his room?
Right.
Yeah. Yes. As I say, this is another aspect of you know, of everything that's going on with him. It was actually my husband that really noticed it first, because he said it's like walking. He said it's like walking through some sort of veil. You know, he said, and the atmosphere in Jason's room, but was always very, very different, and had a very different effect on people as well. You know, either you know, people that went in there, that they either felt really great, you know, really good, really enjoyed it, or else that they felt extremely ill, you know, and had to get out of there. You know, as I say in the book, I do sort of state, you know, a few different reactions, you know, from various people. But we were speaking to Jason about this, you know, and we said, well, what is going on? Why do you have this sort of this dense energy, you know, in your room? And he explained to us that it's their energy. It's he said it's the atmosphere that the ETs survive in. He said that is one thing. He said, and also he said it's there for my protection, which has been borne out, you know, a few times. But it seems to be something that emanates now from him. Whenever he's asleep, I mean, it's like you know, if we would be traveling in the car. You know, and he said it was a long journey, and he'd fall asleep. You know, there were a few times when we would have to pull over, you know, and open all the windows, you know, sort of even in the middle of winter, you know, just to try and sort of, you know, be able to sort of breathe through this this atmosphere. But he tells us, you know, that when he sleeps, he's vulnerable. He said they've actually now taught him to. You know, to create this sort of like energy, if you like, which is like cocoons him, so it protects him. You know, when he's sleeping, and he said that's what, you know, that's what that's all about.
Right. Well, what is your take, Anne, on the alien agenda, so to speak? I mean, why are you being contacted by so many people? What do the aliens say about the future of our planet? And they're trying to help us, is the basic message I'm getting from your book.
Yes, Preston. They, I believe that they are. I mean, again, in conversations with Jason, he tells us that he said, as it is on Earth, he said, so it is out there. He said, in other words, he said, on Earth, he said, you will always get a balance. He said that there is good, there is bad. He said, there's always a balance. He said, which is the way it should be. And he said, it's no different, to be in sort of, out there in space or dimensions. He said, you do get, you do get a lot of the good, the benign beings, benevolent beings. He said, you also get that, sort of coupled with, beings or entities which don't have our best interests at heart. He said, fortunately, that there are a lot more of the good guys here than, than the other sort. But he said, yes, that they are here, trying all they can to help. He said, this is why the Star Children, are sort of gathering in numbers. He said that there are so many sort of Star Kids or, Crystal Children or Indigos, at the moment. He said, because they're all here to help. He said they're all here to assist. He said that they can't actually interfere. He said they are there. He said to help if they're asked to help. He said that is like the pinnacle of it. He said you have to ask for help. He said you are destroying. You're obviously destroying the planet, which goes without saying. I'm sure. He said you're also sort of destroying yourselves. He said you're coming to a point. He said you are getting to that point. He said depending on the decisions that humankind makes. He said will govern which way that the Earth will actually go. It all seems to be gathering at the moment, like mounting up, as he says, things are happening. There are a lot of Earth changes occurring at the moment. He said it's all part of the eventual shift. He said, but which way the planet will shift? He said is still undecided.
Right. Well, let's assume that it shifts the good way. And what does that mean for humanity? I mean, does this mean we're going to be, the UFOs are going to show themselves officially, and we're going to integrate with them into society, or what I mean? What you think is in store for us?
My personal feeling is yes. I do totally believe that. Providing that we all decide that we want to be more than we are, as Jason puts it, that we all want to be all that we can be, then yes, I do totally believe that the ETs, the beings will integrate themselves with us and sort of finally show themselves more fully. I mean, that they are here now. They've been around for many thousands of years. Been amongst us and been interacting with us, if you like. But I do totally believe that should we decide to go. As Jason said, it's a question of getting back that which we all once had. Because he said you only use like a tenth of your brain at the moment. He said the point is, he said at one time, he said, the whole of humanity, was able to use like nearly 100%. He said you all had the power of telepathy. You could all astral travel, astrally project. You could all heal. He said this planet was just wonderful. He said you've lost it over time. It was lost. He said, and it's a question of finding that again. He said, and you know, sort of opening yourself to being everything again. He said we are all part of, he said everybody and everything that exists, every living creature, he said, is all part of the consciousness. He said it's all linked together. He said until we start sort of opening that consciousness again, he said, and becoming everything that, you know, we once were, if you like. He said there's too many closed minds. It just won't happen. That integration can't happen until we are able, as one body, as it were, until we're able to accept, and sort of, you know, welcome, I suppose. Am I rambling, or does that make sense?
No. I totally get what you're saying. I mean, for a long time, I think society wasn't ready for ETs to come and land on the White House lawn, which they tried to do, actually, in 1952 or 54, I believe. I mean, open contact would have then been one of the most disastrous things for humanity. But now I think we're reaching the point where we're almost ready, or I sure hope so.
Oh, yes, so do I.
Because, I mean, it seems like it is moving in that direction, at least, and pretty darn quickly. Now, mm-hmm. Jason is also, mm-hmm. one of the interesting aspects, I think, of people who've had really close encounter experiences is the whole healing aspect. I don't know how many people I've talked to who have become, like, hands-on healers or, you know, do psychic healing after they've had a series of close encounters where they've been apparently taught how to do this. And that's another pattern that's turned up with Jason?
Yes, most definitely. He has a wonderful way of healing. Most of his work, I must say, he does prefer to do, when he travels, when he travels astrally. He tells me that he would travel astrally to, he explains that he feels or he knows instinctively where he's needed, for the most part, and that's where he goes. He also explains to us that he's, occasionally he's present at accidents, this sort of thing, and he does his best to help to either, help to keep people alive until, the ambulance comes, or else he says it's part of his work also to help people who expire at that time. He helps them to understand that, you know, that they need to that they need to move on.
Right.
But say I have sort of, when he's had people at the house, I think there was. There was one incident in the book which I wrote about when somebody actually came to the house, it changed this guy's life forever. Even now, he's sort of, somewhere in Europe, sort of, traveling, in a big sort of camper, just enjoying life basically, and it changed his life completely. And as I say, that was just incredible to be, to witness.
Right, and so positive. I mean, again, you hear a lot of negative stuff being thrown around when it comes to people being abducted by aliens. I mean, even the word abducted has a lot of negative connotations. And not to say that there aren't traumatic things involved with this whole phenomena, but these healing mm-hmm. things are undeniably positive, and actually, I think, a lot more common than people realize, so it's really nice to hear.
It is, yes. Well, as you say, it's obviously in the beginning, Jason was rightly terrified of being taken. As I said to you, the moment we said that we supported him 100%, we believed him, that for him was the turning point. And then, of course, once he started calming down, and not being so terrified, he then started listening and, of course, started understanding and, accepting. which was a big thing, but you know, a total change.
Right. Well, you know what, Anne, we only have like a minute left or two. So is there any last messages you want to leave for our audience about, you know, your experiences or something that might help them understand the whole phenomena?
Well, yes. If I could just say, Preston, you know, obviously everybody's has got their own views, their own beliefs, and I'm not out to sort of, change anybody's. You've got to believe what feels right to you. But all I would say to people is, you know, if you can just keep an open mind, and just be open to the possibilities of, UFOs and alien contact, then, that would be terrific.
All right. I totally agree. Well, Anne, I want to thank you so much for coming on to the show. You want to give out your website once again?
Yes, of course. It's all the W's, walkingbetweenworlds.co.uk.
Walkingbetweenworlds.co.uk. Well,
That's been great
having you on the show. Your story is amazing, and I just want to thank you again for going public, you and Jason and your whole family, because I know this affects the whole family.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, thank you very much. And boy, we really only got to touch a lot of the things I wanted to ask you about. So maybe sometime in the future I could have you on again.
I would love to, Preston. And thank you very much for inviting me this time.
Awesome. All right, everybody. Well, that's our show for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. My name is Preston Dennett. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. Our guest tonight has been Anne Andrews, who has written a fascinating book, which I urge you all to go out there and buy right away. It's called Walking Between Worlds, Belonging to None. And I guarantee you, this is really one of the most fascinating and sincere stories about the UFO phenomena that you will ever read, and that you have a real treat in store. Thank you all again for listening. I hope you can join us next week when our guest is John J. Harper, and he's going to be talking about his book, Transformers: Shamans of the 21st Century, which is all about using trance to develop psychic experiences. Until then, have a great evening.